Welcome to the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast, where it's all about slashing your debt, slashing your taxes, and creating a liberated lifestyle. And now, your host, who has a vast collection of vintage DC and Marvel comic books, and ironically lives in Minnesota, where his favorite NBA team, the LA Lakers, originated, Dave Denniston.
All right, well, you've probably heard about the fact that I'm having my latest book, The Physician's Guide to Money and Life. It is available right now. Now, of course, you can buy it from Amazon, but if you want the best deal possible, what you're going to want to do is buy it from me by texting DocBook, that's DocBook, that's one word, DocBook, to 44222. Or, of course, you can go to the website, which is drfreedompodcast.com/DocBook. Now, I'm offering all kinds of bonuses with this. Make sure to check out the website, send the text, and we'll shoot you right over so you can check it out.
Hello, my friends. This is Dave Denniston, and welcome back to another episode of the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast, a podcast dedicated to helping doctors like you slash your debt, slash your taxes, and live a liberated lifestyle. Well, in this episode today, we're coming back to a physician, a return guest, to talk more about his journey, his joys, his struggles with finances, outside of finances, in our monthly fireside chat. This guest, he is a man that's been on a mission to help doctors become healthy, happy, and debt-free, and now he is fully retired for the last year. Please help me welcome back Dr. Corey Fawcett. Welcome back, Corey.
Well, hi, thanks. Yeah, it's great to be here. I had so much fun last time we talked, I thought maybe we should do it again.
There you go. I'm glad to have you. I think this is the first physician we've had on the podcast that is fully retired. So I would love to hear, you were newly retired around the last time that we spoke. And I've often heard from people that they're often busier in retirement than they ever were in their working lives. Tell me about your perspective. How's it been? What's it been like being retired?
Well, I would definitely say that. I am busier. I don't call myself retired. I call myself repurposed. because now I'm still working. I write books, writing a blog, speaking, doing things like that. So, you know, the internet retirement police would come after me saying, you're not retired, you're still working. So I kind of like to say I've repurposed. But I tell you, the things I thought were going to happen when I retired, it didn't work out that way.
Like what?
Well, I thought, you know, all these projects around the house I'm going to be able to catch up on, and I'm going to do all these cool things, and I discovered several months into it that the state of caught up doesn't exist. I thought, I'm going to have all this extra free time, I'm going to do all these projects, but the thing is every time you do one project, you add three more to the list. And
so tell us about that.
Never catch up.
Give us some examples. What are things that you said, oh yeah, I'm going to fix this in the house, but then what things came in the way that stopped you from that?
One of the biggest things that gets in the way is just having fun. Last year, for example, my first year, I wrote an article about what was the first year of retirement like and what does it look like. Well, we were only home 50% of the time.
Hmm.
So that alone totally wipes out all this supposed gain of all these hours you're going to have to do stuff around the house. If half of the time you're not even home, it doesn't compute. And then when you do get home, you're catching up on, you know, the mail that you've missed and the things that have gotten behind. We visited 15 states and 11 countries in the first 12 months that I was retired.
Oh my goodness! What are the best places you've been to?
The neatest thing that I did was a 31-day cruise. I made an interesting discovery. The longest cruise I had been on before that time was a 14-day cruise through the Panama Canal.
Hmm.
And about 3 days before that cruise was over, I was ready to get off the boat. I had enough. I'm ready to get back, okay? Well, then we go on this longer cruise, 31 days. It was actually a 68-day cruise, and we got on it in the middle. and it was cruising around South America.
68
so we got on in
days.
Yeah. We got on in Argentina, and then we cruised up Brazil, and we spent a week cruising up the Amazon River, and then through the Caribbean and back to Florida. But I made an interesting discovery. Here I was worried about, 10 days into it, am I going to be off the boat, and I still got 21 days to go? I discovered that long cruises are different than short cruises. And when we got to Florida, if we didn't have obligations set up back home, I would have just paid and kept going on the trip where it goes next. I didn't want to get off the boat. It was really very different. So the best way I can equate it is on short cruises, and that's what almost everybody takes is a short cruise, you know, less than 2 weeks. Those are working people who are on vacation. And they're trying to cram all the fun they can into that week.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly how I had taken the cruises before. And at the end of the week, I'm tired. I get home. I need a vacation from my vacation so
right.
I can rest up from all the stuff I did on that cruise. Well, on a long cruise, everybody on that boat pretty much is retired. And they live on the boat. It's not like they live full-time on the boat, but when you're going to be there for 2 months, you kind of move into the room, and now you guess this is where you live now for the next several weeks. And so, you know, you get on that seven-day cruise, and like 2 days into it, you're still trying to figure out where everything is, and they're passing out paperwork for when you disembark, and, you know, are you going to be in Group A or Group B, and you're already thinking about getting off the boat. But you get on these longer cruises, and it's so far from now when you get off this boat, it's not even on your mind. There's nobody rushing around trying to do stuff. Many of these people are on their, you know, 30th cruise. It's a different attitude. I sat down with one guy one evening. We were listening to the music, and it was a dress-up night, and he had been on 4 or 5 world cruises. These are 4 months long. So these guys are just different people. It's a slower atmosphere. These people are kind of more enjoying themselves rather than cramming stuff in. They're not cramming anything, I tell you. These guys are just kind of laid back. It's a different feel. I would love to do it again.
Would you say most people that were on there for long cruises, are they really well off? Is this just kind of part of their lifestyle? You know, how would you describe the kind of people that are going on these extended cruises?
I would say they definitely are people who have money. They're not poor people. You know, it's fairly expensive to take a long cruise. But it's not really more expensive than any of the other things that we do, like, you know, I'm going to go to France for a week or two. It's not a lot more expensive, but they definitely had, it was a group of people that had more money. But they definitely spent their money differently on the cruise. You know, a good example is, you know, you've been on a cruise?
A very short one, yes.
Okay, so every time you get off the boat, there's somebody there with a camera taking pictures of you on this spot and then taking the pictures the next day on another spot. And so you get back at the end of your day, and there's, you know, 4,000 pictures up on the wall, and you can't even find yours. There's so many pictures they took, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, on these long cruises, these guys that have been on so many cruises, they don't need another picture of them getting off the boat. So you get back on the boat, there's 15 pictures on the board, and, oh, there I am right there. You know, so every now and then something special was happening that day or something, and they took a picture. But there's only a handful of pictures taken because these guys just don't need another picture of them on a cruise. So they spend their money differently. They spend their time differently. A lot more people were in the library reading or just up on the deck enjoying the day. It was just a very different atmosphere than the go-go. Very few kids on the cruise. There's not a lot of kids on any cruise unless you're on a Disney cruise, but even less so on a cruise like this.
So what did you learn about handling your finances when you're on an extended trip like this, which I'm sure the internet connection, I'm guessing, probably isn't super great the whole time? You know, what was that like, trying to manage your money and manage your bills and all of those kinds of things?
The internet connection sucks. I mean, it just, when you're floating out in the ocean, the connection you get is really poor. But you can check email. And so I actually bought a package. I was trying to run an online business while I'm out there and respond to people. And so I bought a package that would allow me to be on the internet 30 minutes a day. And that time would be spent just trying to respond to people who were trying to contact me. So your usage of your internet goes way down. And you have to have things taken care of ahead of time. You don't really want to rely on trying to do things over the internet. You have your bills already automated. We have a bunch of checks that we have to write. There's some things you can't automate. And so there was a bunch of checks, and we wrote those ahead of time, and they were sitting in a pile back home for my son on the first of the month to put them in the mailbox, for example. We have a special mailbox that I got when I started doing locums work that will hold a little more than a month's worth of mail all at once, and it's locked. It's called a Fort Knox mailbox. So you got to deal with, you know, all that mail that's going to be coming in for a month. You want somebody checking in on your house. But all my investments are all automated. I don't even ever look at them. So there was nothing I have to do with anything like that. It was just the fact that I'm still running a business. I'm repurposed, not retired. That created some need for me to be in contact. And so it was a pretty easy thing to have had that taken care of before you leave. But we were only gone 31 days. Some of these guys that are gone for months, the guy I talked to has been on many world cruises. We were cruising near tax time, and we were going to get home to deal with our taxes. I asked him, well, what do you do with your taxes?
Yeah.
And he said, oh, I never pay them in April. I always file an extension. Then I can just pay them whenever I get home. So he doesn't have to worry about his taxes. You just file an extension every time. And then whenever he's back home, then he'll deal with it. So these people learned a different life. And you get to know the staff. I was sitting at the poker table playing poker one night, and this lady, who was fairly demanding kind of person, needed something. And she just asked for the phone, and they handed her the phone, which connects to the front office or someplace. I don't know where they, but connects to the phone, and she says, hi, this is Margaret. I need the porter to go to my room and get this and bring it to me. She didn't mention her last name. She didn't mention what her room number was. She just says, hi, this is Margaret. And they knew who they were talking to.
Wow.
So, when you're on the boat for a long time, the staff really get to know who you are, what you like. For instance, I sat down to eat one day, and we were in a party traveling. There was four of us in different rooms, and we were in two different rooms. And my wife and I sat down to eat one day at lunch, and the waiter came up and says, oh, hey, and named the other people that were with us. Those are guys who are over on the other side eating right now, too. He knew who was in my party, and he knew they were eating already, and he could actually connect us up. So it's really a different life. It's really fun, and I can't wait to try another long cruise. I'm ready for that world cruise, 4 months long.
Wow, that sounds great. And just financially, I know that we talked last time in the podcast about all the rental properties you have. Was there ever a point where you've stressed about money in the last year? Or has it just all come pretty easily in your repurposed life?
Stressed about money. Yeah, there's... Well, first of all, Even though I look at the money and I know it's there and I know there's plenty, I still sometimes have that feeling of, will I have enough?
Tell me more. What do you think's behind that?
I think there's always that. There's so far, the distance between now and the end of my life could be so long and so many things can happen. I think we always wonder, well, what if this happens or what if that happens? I wrote in one of my books a quote, John D. Rockefeller, when he was thought to be one of the richest men in the world, was asked, how much is enough? And his answer was, just a little bit more. I mean, the richest guy in the world thought he still didn't have enough. And so now and then, I still kind of run that thought runs through my, am I really going to have enough? Is it really? And yet, I got more than I can spend every year, but that still kind of jumps back into your mind. I don't think I'm ever going to get totally away from that. I mean, you look at stars that make millions, and then they're bankrupt.
Right? Yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't have the same millions that those guys had, and they didn't make it to the end of their retirement. You know, they didn't even make it to the end of their career without running out of money. So when you see stuff like that on TV or read it on the internet that, so-and-so is trying to sell his $30 million house to pay his taxes because he ran out of money, it makes you wonder, well, if he's going to run out of money, what about me?
So walk me through, like, your cash flow. Has your strategy been to start drawing down your assets, or are your rental properties supporting your lifestyle? You know, walk me through what your strategy has been in year one.
In the beginning, we were just living off of stuff that we got bought out of. So I was a partner in a private practice. So we also had several other businesses that were around medicine, that I was involved in. And many of those businesses required you to be an active practicing doctor. When you retired, you were forced to be bought out. They didn't want, a bunch of guys sitting on the beach in Hawaii collecting all the money from that business. They want the active practicing doctors getting paid for doing the work. And so I was forced to be bought out on several things. And so in the beginning, we just lived on that stuff. So I didn't bother to tap my retirement plan. I didn't bother to tap any of the money that was still coming in from my rental properties. They were still just paying down their debts faster. And so now that money is kind of dried up. And so what we've actually done, in fact, I have a blog article coming out this week, which will predate this when this actually gets to people's ears. It will already be out on how to actually collect your money from your IRA when you are under 59 and a half. And I'm 56. And so just this month, I did that first, equal periodic payment program so that I don't have to pay any
penalties.
Penalties. Word slipped.
The 10% penalty.
You don't have to pay the penalty if you follow the rules. And so I made the very first distribution from my retirement plans just a couple weeks ago. And I had the choice, you're taking this distribution of how much are you going to set it up for? You can pretty much determine how much you're going to do, and then it has to be equal every year for the next 5 years to avoid the penalty. And so trying to figure out, well, how much are we going to take? I decided to just go ahead and use the 4% rule. I mean, it's been pretty clearly set that if you limit your retirement plan withdrawals to 4%, it's going to last the rest of your life. So here we are. We have enough cash flow from the property to cover our expenses. I don't live a super lavish life. I don't have my own airplane. I know some people with more than one airplane, but we don't have any. I can live on just the cash flow. I live really nice on just the cash flow from the property. And then you would just, what about all that retirement money I put away? And we had a discussion about that, my wife and I. Why don't we just use it? If we just let it sit there because we don't need it, we're going to end up being the richest people in the graveyard. What's the point of that? So we went ahead and began to take the money. And the first payment came a couple weeks ago. I haven't actually noticed it was an automatic transfer, from my IRA into my account. So we haven't actually seen that the money has arrived yet. We'll see it, I guess, on our next statement. But we decided to go ahead and take some of that. So we're going to take money from 4% from my retirement plan money, plus the cash flow from the rental real estate, and have fun.
Go on another 30 or 60 or 90-day cruise or something. Perfect.
Well, the big thing we're going to do, we won't be doing one next year. The big thing we have planned like that is going to be, we're going to walk the Camino de Santiago, which is a 500-mile walk across Spain.
Wow.
And we're going to do that next summer. So basically, it's a six-week walk, 12 to 15 miles a day. And so that's the big chunk of time we've set aside for next year that we'll be gone. And since we're already over there, we'll probably go a couple weeks ahead of time and go do someplace else. But you can only have a small backpack on that trip. You won't be carrying luggage. You're walking. And so we thought, that's a really cool opportunity to do some other exploring in Europe when we're there with just a backpack. Go to some place like Switzerland and hike the Alps. You're free to just go from place to place, and everything you have's on your back. It's an interesting opportunity. Rick Steves does a lot of travel through Europe information shows, and that's how he likes you to travel, with your just a small backpack instead of carrying a suitcase. So you can hop on the train, go to the next town, walk around, explore that town, and then hop on the train and go to the next town again, and do that multiple times without dragging a suitcase around. And so we're going to actually be in Europe in that type of scenario where we just have a backpack that's only got, 12 to 15 pounds in it.
All right. Well, let's take a pause here for a second and go to our commercial break. Well, if you are like some members of my audience, you are committed to being an amazing doctor and succeeding at life. But the truth is, you've never had all this financial training during medical school, and you're just struggling with enough time to do it all. Well, my friend, over 2 years ago, I started on this journey of writing my next book. And it was a book for residents and fellows, and I reached out to a few potential authors, and Amanda Liu joined me on this journey. Finally, it is available, The Physician's Guide, The Young Physician's Guide to Money and Life. It is packed with pretty much anything and everything you want to know as a young physician. Millionaire mindset, debt payoff, buying your first home, and contract negotiation. Now, of course, you can pick it up at Amazon or Barnes & Noble or any major vendor. However, if you want the best deal possible, you are going to want to get it from me by texting DocBook, that's all one word, DocBook, to 44222, or going to drfreedompodcast.com/DocBook. Now, why am I suggesting to do this? Well, it's because I am offering the sun, the moon, and the stars when you buy it directly from me. Because not only will you get a physical copy of the book, for only about $25, $24.95, you are going to get the following as a bonus. Of course, the physical copy of the book, an electronic copy of the book, an audio copy of my other book, The Freedom Formula for Physicians, all of the episodes of the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast, over four seasons worth of material, and you're going to get an electronic copy of the newest edition of the Tax Reduction Prescriptions. And on top of that, you're going to get a whole new write-up on my journey in land investing. You're going to get exclusive content on that as I am going forward. My friends, this is over $100 retail of priceless knowledge. Are you ready to pick up this book and all the bonuses and get all that financial training that you've desired? You're going to get it from me by texting DocBook. Again, that's all one word, DocBook, to 44222. Or going to www.drfreedompodcast.com/DocBook. To snag your copy now, text DocBook to 44222. Or going to drfreedompodcast.com/DocBook. And now, back to the show.
If I'm just to kind of sum up what you've been saying about this journey in the first year, it sounds like you've had more than enough with your rental properties, for example, to cover your living expenses. Then you said, you know what? We're only going to live once. We're young. Let's start drawing out of our retirement accounts. We're going to take out 4% a year, and we're going to go enjoy life.
That's exactly what we decided to do. Up until that point, I mean, my idea was just leave that in there and let it grow.
Yeah.
You know, because it comes back to that will we have enough mentality. But my wife's idea was, yes, we have enough. Let's use it. And so, we're going to get out and enjoy ourselves. In fact, I was just looking at last year's budget and spending. 37% of our spending last year was travel.
Which certainly, if you had to, you could cut that out, right? I mean, it's not like you have to travel. You know, if things do get to worst case scenario, you could end up not traveling as much and just socking away the money. Sounds like you have your various accounts set up now to have automatic withdrawals, so you're going to be taking out that money no matter what the next few years. So you could always just save it away if you had to and not spend it on travel.
With that equal payment program, we only have to do that for 5 years. And once I get between that age 60 and 70 range, then you can take however much you want out each year. It will be variable. But
so
I'm stuck with just that much for 5 years. You know.
Here's something I'm really curious about, Corey. I know you're a man of faith, and I would love to know about any sort of thoughts or struggle on consuming your money like you have been and are planning to. Maybe in addition to, or how kind of giving gets into your world and your picture, you know, is giving to charitable causes and helping other people out, you know, how have you struggled with that thought in this wonderful case that you have more money than you necessarily need?
That's a really good topic. It could probably be a whole podcast all by itself. We went through the process of saying, you know, what are we going to do for our charitable giving when I retired? And the thing is we had been tithing, you know, you earn this much money and you tithe it, and then we gave over and above that. We had missionaries set up that we were supporting, and they were counting on our money. But yet, I'm going to quit working, and my actual earned income is going to fall down to zero. I still have some passive income, you know, coming in off the properties. So what we decided was that the amount of money we had been giving to people was not going to drop. Mm-hmm. Even though my income was going to fall, the giving that we were doing was going to stay the same.
And
so if we were supporting a missionary, we would just continue to support them all through it.
And how did you factor that in? You know, as you look at your you just made a budget, I guess, overall, and said, okay, here's what we're doing for giving, here's what we're going to do for travel, here's what we need for living, or what did that look like? Or have you just kind of going month by month and seeing how it goes, or, you know, what's that journey?
In the beginning, we didn't really know what that would mean. I mean, if you have $100,000 come in and you give away $200,000, that isn't going to work. So in the beginning, we weren't sure. But the way it worked out is we still had way more money than we were spending. So it didn't really matter. We still spend, I mean, throughout my whole life, we tended to spend only half of our income at any given time or less. And that's kind of still happening anyway. So giving didn't really become affected much. We just kept it going. And I've talked to some other people who've done that same thing, that giving, because our income went down and the giving didn't change, our giving percentage went way up. But the absolute money that I still have available to live on after doing that still was more than I needed. And yet we're traveling half the time. So we kind of built in a pretty good cushion before I actually pulled the trigger to be repurposed. And then on top of that, the business that I'm doing with, you know, selling books and running a blog, that business is actually earning more money as time goes by as well. So I don't, giving stayed a big part of our life, just like it was beforehand. And I suspect most people, when they retire, whatever their attitude of giving was before, kind of continues on. If you weren't giving before, you're not going to start now. If you were giving generously before, you're likely to still be generous.
I like the idea of being generous a lot better, personally. And I would love to know, too, you know, as you've been looking at all the numbers, you and I were talking before we started chatting about me and my land flipping business, and I've found I really enjoy doing the deals. It's been a lot of fun seeing people respond and getting offers and buying and selling, and you certainly aren't doing the volume that I do with the land business that you do in houses. Is that something that you still have been or are planning on buying more properties and selling some with time? Tell me more about kind of how your real estate has factored into it. Do you want that portfolio to grow? Do you want it to stay static? Do you want it to get smaller? You know, tell me more about that.
We made a conscious decision back in around 2006, 2007 to stop buying property. And the reason was is we had enough. My wife put it, you know, it was a difference between how I wanted to do it and how my wife wanted to do it. As far as I was concerned, I loved making the deals. You just mentioned you liked that part too. I loved finding a piece of property, negotiating the deal, purchasing it, and, you know, that was fun. But each one was a little more time that it needed. And my wife made the comment, well, look, we already own enough property to take care of us for the rest of our life. Exactly why do you want to buy another one? And it takes up more of your time each time you do an event. You know, each one of them takes up something. And she had a good point, you know, when is enough enough? And we kind of made the deal that, okay, you know, we've got mortgages on these properties. We should probably stop buying any new property until at least all of these mortgages are paid off. Let's concentrate on paying off these mortgages, which increases your cash flow even more, versus buying more property. And so we stopped the accumulating of property back then. And I really don't have any desire to sell any of this stuff. I've had to sell some stuff because I was forced into it. You know, I used to own my office building, but when I left the practice, I had to sell my shares. Mm-hmm. You know, I own an apartment building in a partnership that the partnership is dissolving, and so that one's going to sell. But the stuff that my wife and I own, we really don't have a desire to sell any of it. We'll probably still own these same apartments when we're gone. They'll just be debt-free by then.
Hmm. Fascinating. Fascinating, fascinating. Well, I think what I'm picking up in the conversation is this wonderful thing of balance, which all of us need. I know me and my wife, she's much more the outgoing artist. I'm more the numbers-crunching introverted nerd, and there's balance in the relationship. And I see the same thing in what you're describing with your wife. And I think it's a beautiful thing when you can kind of get reined in a little bit from some of our natural impulses that we have by our better halves.
When she was doing this, I was a full-time doctor and managing all the apartments. So she would have liked me home some more. You know,
right.
And so it's like, so okay, enough's enough. You got plenty. Let's do some other stuff with our time now.
Mm.
We don't need more money. We need more time.
Mm. Love it. Great revelation. Well, I'd love to know, Corey, now reflecting on the last year and a half, what advice would you give to those of us listening of lessons to be learned from the way that you've done it? In your journey in this last year and a half and the preparation to that moment?
Well, there's a couple of things that I would say when you first retire that I've learned are important. Number one, retirement is a stressor.
Hmm.
And we know through medicine that you want to limit stresses in your life. So a major stressor is like divorce. A major stressor is moving to a new house.
Yes.
A major stressor is retirement. These are all stressors. So don't compound stressor on top of stressor. So retirement is going to be a big enough stressor. So when you do that, just deal with retirement. Don't try and buy a new house someplace you're going to move to. Don't try and pick up some new job you're going to do. First get over the big change of retirement before you do something else.
Give yourself a little bit of time to catch up.
Yeah. A lot of people have all these big plans. You know, the moment we retire, I live in Oregon. So we're going to retire and we're going to move to Florida. Well, I would say don't do those at the same time.
Mm.
Retire and give yourself a year to be retired and get that routine down, and then a year later, move to Florida. Don't do them at the same time. Because, you know, when you lose your job, a lot of people lose their identity.
Hmm.
There's a lot of, when you run into people, you know, what do? So if you're a doctor and you quit being a practicing doctor and people say, what do? How do you answer that question? A lot of people's identity is in their job. And so I think you need to get through that first before you do anything else. Another big thing is to meet with your accountant. This was a mistake I made. My financial picture changed dramatically the year I retired. So suddenly earned income, which is the highest taxed income we get, my earned income disappeared.
Right.
So my taxes changed immensely. I wrote an article about the tax surprises that happened to me. And the thing that I missed up on was the reality was is my tax bill went to zero that year.
Mm.
Zero. I owed nothing. Well, That would have been an awesome time for me to do some Roth conversions and take some money out of my regular traditional IRAs and convert them to a Roth IRA with zero taxes, or fill up that first bracket. I missed that window because it was after December 31st that I figured out my tax bill was actually going to be zero.
Well, I often say to people, you know, when you meet with your CPA to talk about your past year taxes, you know, they're so busy that they're not going to have the time of day for you, most of them anyhow. And so I would echo what you say, but you have to do it probably August, September, October, somewhere around there where October, they might be busy with some of the extensions. You know, I think maybe November might be good. August, November, somewhere around that time frame is a great time to get together with your tax preparer, because they're not dealing with as much of the deadlines as they are when you get together with them in March or April when you're actually
Or
December, a lot of the year-end stuff. So I think that's a great suggestion.
I mentioned to my accountant, I said, well, next year, let's meet in December. And he says, how about November? So December gets pretty busy for him. But, yeah, definitely you need to meet with your accountant and see what is going to be different for you this year financially with your taxes. I got caught by surprise, and I missed a great opportunity that – it won't come back again, because now I'm taking money. This year I've taken money out of my retirement plan, so that money will be taxed. And so that zero tax thing for me was a one-year thing.
Plus, it sounds like you're having to sell some real estate, which I'm sure will have some tax implications and things like that too. So it'll be a much different year for you, which I think is the other point I would make for people. In retirement, your taxes can really swing drastically from year to year. Some years you might have, like Corey has, where you have almost no taxes, and the next year you have a big fat tax bill as maybe you sell some appreciated assets or you get capital gains from various places. So I think it's definitely the kind of thing that is not as regular as it was when you're working.
Yeah, when you're working, it's usually pretty steady. Each tax year is pretty similar to the last one, but now it's very different. And I guess the last piece of advice I give to a new retiring person is that whole notion that the state of caught up doesn't exist. You're not going to catch up with everything. It's just not going to happen. And it's not that bad if your garage is still a mess. Just enjoy life, do some fun things, and don't worry about that to-do list of those things that you'd really like to do, but they don't really matter. You know, put them in there some places, but you're just not going to get all those honeydews completely caught up, because there's going to be some fun things that come up, like, hey, let's go to Brazil for a month.
Wow.
And so you're just... fun things are going to come up that just take up your time, and you will probably have, because of that, maybe less free time than when you were working. And the other issue with that is, you know, time, things that you do tend to take up as much time as there's available.
Mm-hmm.
So when you were working and you're really busy, I got 1 hour to do this project. You get the project done in an hour.
Right.
So now you're retired. I got all day to do this project. It takes you all day to do the project. You know, when I was working, I could have done this in an hour. How come it took me all day? Because I had all day. And so you just, you know, stuff expands to the available space, and the same thing happens with time. You just tend to expand stuff to match your available time.
Great advice, Corey. Well, I think we got to wrap up the podcast here. And I was going to ask if you had final thoughts, but may have just laid them out. Do you have any final thoughts you'd like to share with us?
You know, retirement is better than I thought it would be. And I think if you're considering it, you should just do it. I hemmed and hawed for quite a while. My wife just kept saying, you know, we do have enough. I kept wondering, do I have enough? Do I have enough? She kept saying, we do have enough. Finally, I believed her, and we did it. But it will be better than you thought. You know, you don't really run into a lot of people that say, I wish I was still working. When they finally have gotten to the point that they can stop, unless you really love what you're doing and you want to keep going, if you're thinking about retiring, you probably ought to pull the trigger.
I love it. I love it. Great advice. And Corey, where can we find you? In any new books or anything people should check out from you?
Well, I'm found at drcoreysfawcett.com on my website, Prescription for Financial Success. My latest book, Doctor's Guide to Smart Career Alternatives in Retirement, came out last fall. It'll probably be at least winter before the next book comes out, but I do have a course coming out for people. Keep an eye out for that one. It should be out this fall. So that's
Perfect.
My story, and I'm sticking to it.
And that's all we have to say about that. All right, folks. Well, thank you, Corey, again for being with us. It's a pleasure.
Oh, thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun.
All right, my friends, there you go. Lots of new things from Corey to check out. Lots of good thoughts to think about retirement and what retirement might look like and when is enough enough and how does that all work. So I think there was a lot of things to think about in this particular podcast and great stories we took away from Corey. So with that, let me just say thank you so much for listening. It means the world to have you take some time out of your busy, super compressed schedule to spend with me. Make sure to check out the podcast, drfreedompodcast.com. If you could rate and do a written review of the podcast on iTunes, I would be ever so grateful. Feel free to hit me up anytime. You'd love to be on the podcast and tell your story. Dave@drfreedompodcast.com. For the Freedom Formula for Physicians Podcast, this is Dave Denniston. Remember, my friends, remember to slash your debt, slash your taxes, and live a liberated lifestyle.
All right, my friends. Well, that was the show for today. I hope you loved it. And I just want to give you one more reminder. My newest book, The Young Physician's Guide to Money and Life, is available right now. $25. You get the sun, the moon, the stars, all kinds of bonuses, $100 worth of priceless knowledge. Are you ready to go and pick this book up? If so, you're going to want to get it from me and get all those bonuses by texting DocBook, that's DocBook, to 44222, or going to the website drfreedompodcast.com/DocBook. Again, snag your copy now by texting DocBook, that's all one word, to 44222, or going to drfreedompodcast.com/DocBook.